I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, sticker shock. Get ready to pay more for your next car as President Trump unveils tariffs on the auto industry. We're at the White House. Defund Planned Parenthood. Pro-lifers bring their initiative to Capitol Hill to begin a massive outreach to lawmakers. A prayer for protection. We look back at the pivotal moment when Pope Francis delivered an extraordinary blessing to the world during the COVID-19 pandemic. Plus, somber remembrance. Father Joseph Mary Wolfe joins us to discuss the anniversary of the death of our foundress, Mother Angelica. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, stocks for U.S. automakers shifted into reverse today. The big three, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis all closed down. It comes on the heels of President Donald Trump's tariff announcement. In just 1 week, 25% levies will be placed on all cars that are not made in the U.S., as well as some automobile parts. Reaction is pouring in from several fronts. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Monsi, the administration here at the White House is expecting to raise $100 billion in revenues annually from the tariffs and foster domestic manufacturing. President Trump says business is coming back to the United States, but with the tariffs, the criticism.
And this is very modest. And what we're going to be doing is a 25% tariff on all cars that are not made in the United States. If they're made in the United States, there's absolutely no tariff.
After that Wednesday announcement by President Donald Trump, today, Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt tells reporters,
"The president is determined to rebuild our manufacturing base. We want more jobs, more products made right here in the United States, which means more money in the pockets of the American people at the end of the day."
But the move could also put a financial squeeze on automakers that depend on global supply chains.
You know, on the higher price side, a lot of moving parts here, a lot of uncertainty, but I think if the tariffs are imposed as articulated and stay in place, by this time next year, the typical car price will be somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 more.
President Trump argues the tariffs will lead to more factories opening in the United States and help narrow the budget deficit.
And I would just like to emphasize these auto tariffs yesterday are a big deal for auto workers in the industry. And you saw the United Auto Workers Union, Sean Fain, who wasn't the greatest fan of the president on the campaign trail, came out this morning and applauded the president for this move.
The European Automobile Manufacturers Association called it very concerning.
We're deeply worried that this will have a major impact on automaking around the world. And on European manufacturers and other global manufacturers. It will also have an impact in the U.S. itself.
In addition to the auto tariffs, President Trump plans to impose what he calls reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd. And overnight, the president warning in a post, if the European Union works with Canada in order to do economic harm to the USA, large-scale tariffs, far larger than currently planned, will be placed on them both in order to protect the best friend that each of those two countries has ever had.
And President Trump wants to provide an incentive. He thinks if you borrow money to buy a car, you should be able to deduct the interest payments off your taxes, but only if that car is made in America. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Joining us now is Ryan Young. He's a senior economist at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thank you for joining us. Ryan, Ford CEO Jim Farley recently said in an interview that he was concerned the tariffs would have a devastating impact on the U.S. auto industry and benefit foreign competitors. Is that your view?
Yeah, the auto industry is already hurting from steel tariffs, which are raising their input costs. That alone can add a few hundred dollars to the sticker price of a new car. If you add 25% tariffs, even for an American producer like Ford, it can add $5,000 or more to the sticker price of a car because parts cross borders multiple times during the process. And the worst part is we don't even know to what extent the tariffs will apply to each part. Those are still being determined, and we're only a week out from when the tariffs might be taking effect. So the bottom line is if you're in the market for a new car, you are going to pay a lot more.
Well, as we just heard, the United Auto Workers are praising President Trump's tariffs. Economists are not so certain. Tell us more about this duality.
It might be good for union jobs in the short term, but as we're seeing in the steel industry, despite extensive tariff protection, Cleveland-Cliffs, one of the larger steel producers in the U.S., just announced 600 layoffs. And Ford has said something similar on their end. Back in January, they warned that if President Trump does go through with a tariff package, they could end up laying off thousands of workers, and this is likely what's going to happen here. So they might get a short-run boost in union jobs, but in the long run, it's not good for the industry as a whole or for union jobs either.
Well, Ryan, quickly, President Trump predicted the tariffs will lead automakers to shift their car production and their supply chains to American factories, but it doesn't seem that simple, is it?
It's not nearly that simple. The supply chains we have took years, and in some cases, decades, to build up. And here they're being asked to restructure them in a week. That is just not going to happen. And in the meantime, families are going to pay thousands of dollars more for a car, and families priced out of that, even if they turn to the used market, when you have more and more people crowding into the used market, also families in need of a new car that's breaking down, they don't have anywhere to turn.
Well, it seems now's not the moment for a car purchase. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
The U.S. economy expanded at a healthy 2.4% pace during the last 3 months of 2024. The data is supported by a year-end surge in consumer spending. For all of 2024, the economy grew 2.8%, down from 2.9% in 2023. Consumer spending rose at a 4% pace, while business investment fell due to an 8.7% drop in investment in equipment. Today, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced a change that will, in their words, make America healthy again. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that 10,000 jobs will be cut in a major overhaul of the department. Kennedy said the measure will reduce bureaucratic sprawl by consolidating the different offices. HHS is responsible for monitoring infectious diseases, inspecting foods and hospitals, as well as overseeing health insurance programs for nearly half the country. The Trump administration says the alleged leader of the violent MS-13 street gang on the East Coast has been arrested in Virginia.
He was the leader for the East Coast, one of the top three in the entire country. Right here in Virginia, living half an hour outside of Washington, D.C. He is an illegal alien from El Salvador, and he will not be living in our country much longer.
The administration is touting the arrest as part of its effort to quash illegal immigration and eliminate gangs. The man has been identified as 24-year-old Henry Josue Villatoro Santos from El Salvador and was taken in on a gun charge. A federal appeals court will not lift an order barring the Trump administration from deporting Venezuelan migrants to El Salvador. This after the Trump administration deported hundreds of people under the Alien Enemies Act, calling the Tren de Aragua gang an invading force. The DOJ appealed after a U.S. district judge blocked more deportations and ordered planes filled with immigrants to turn around. Attorneys from the American Civil Liberties Union filed the lawsuit on behalf of five Venezuelan non-citizens being held in Texas. Hundreds of pro-lifers from across the country swarmed Capitol Hill today. They met with lawmakers and staff. Their goal is to defund Planned Parenthood as part of a new Republican-backed bill that will fulfill President Trump's agenda. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric?
Well, good evening, Monse. Yes, the event was organized by Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Now, staffers tell me that it might be the largest gathering of pro-lifers since January's March for Life. Their goal, as you mentioned, eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood ahead of the U.S. Supreme Court hearing a case in April that could strip the organization's funding in South Carolina.
Where the pro-life movement stands unified behind one single message: defund the entire abortion industry. Defund the longtime standard bearer of Planned Parenthood once and for all.
Several hundred pro-lifers from 39 states made the trek to D.C. and stood among 1,076 pink crosses, which organizers say signifies the number of abortions Planned Parenthood performs daily.
These are both for your member and their staff, so you hand one to the member.
Prior to the rally, pro-lifers were given instructions for their meetings with lawmakers. The event coincides with President Trump's expected announcement that he will freeze federal funding for Planned Parenthood.
this is the first time that we can really put points on the board. I mean, it's not a game. It's about life. It's about moms. But it's really important that we do something that is significant, that will save lives.
I feel this is the kind of the number one issue in America today. And maybe, you know, it's definitely up there in the world. I think it's almost almost akin to a civil rights issue.
A former Planned Parenthood whistleblower claims her office illegally double-billed insurance companies as a way to gather more funds.
I called out as an abortion director that they were misusing funds, that they were not following rules and regulations, that they were harming the patients. Of course, they didn't like it, and that's why I got fired.
And for lawmakers themselves, their views fall along party lines.
Pro-lifers are here trying to defund Planned Parenthood. Your thoughts on that?
We should, again. If Planned Parenthood wants to raise money independent of the federal government, that's fine.
The government funds haven't been used for abortions for decades. So what they're really attacking is the ability of Planned Parenthood to do family planning, birth control services, mammograms, pap smears, and just basic health services for women in America.
And by the way, the Hyde Amendment does restrict government funding for most abortions, but that has to be passed by Congress on a yearly basis. Pro-life lawmakers say during the Biden administration, Planned Parenthood received more than $700 million in federal funds. Monse?
Eric, the White House has asked former House Republican Whip Elise Stefanik to bow out of contention to be U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. What can you tell us about that latest development?
Yeah, that is correct. President Trump and House Republican leadership have been concerned with the GOP slim majority that it has in the House right now. It's making it difficult to pass President Trump's agenda, so Stefanik will return to Congress next week. Also, a special election is being held in Florida for former Congressman Mike Waltz's seat. And that's closer than expected, so it's adding some urgency to the matter. Stefanik was the fourth highest ranking House Republican, and I'm hearing that Johnson will create a special position for her back on leadership. I'm also hearing that by her returning back to Congress, she'll be in line for another high-profile position later in the Trump administration. Monse?
Thank you so much, Eric. Well, at least six people are dead after a tourist submarine sank off the coast of Egypt. It's not immediately clear what caused the sub to sink. It was sailing off one of the beaches in the tourist promenade area, carrying 45 tourists of various nationalities. This comes after a tourist yacht sank in the Red Sea this past November. Many tourist companies have stopped or limited travel on the Red Sea because of conflict in the region. Air raid sirens sounded over Israel as long-range missiles fired by Yemen's Houthi rebels were intercepted before crossing into Israeli territory. The Houthis claimed responsibility for the attack. No one in Israel has been hurt after a handful of rockets have been fired from Yemen as well as Gaza in the last week. The attacks came after the collapse of a ceasefire deal and Israel resumed fighting. Leaders of nearly 30 countries plus NATO and EU chiefs met in France to discuss the war in Ukraine. France and Britain are moving forward with plans to deploy troops in Ukraine to defend an eventual peace deal with Russia. However, French President Emmanuel Macron says only some other countries want to take part. This comes as the fighting races on, with Ukrainian officials saying Russian drone attacks wounded more than 20 people overnight. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including Irish goodbye. The University of Notre Dame departs from tradition with its choice of commencement speaker. And analysis of a new study that says people are leaving the religion of their childhood. The University of Notre Dame is making news for who it's inviting and who it did not invite to speak at its graduation later this year. Dating from the 1970s, the Catholic institution has invited newly inaugurated presidents to deliver the commencement address. This year, neither President Trump nor Catholic Vice President J.D. Vance will speak. Instead, Admiral Christopher Gray, Joint Chiefs of Staff Acting Chairman and a Notre Dame alum, will address the graduating class. A new study shows a disturbing trend in America and across the globe. It shows that in many countries, a fifth or more of all adults have left the religion they grew up in. The largest percentage was found in South Korea, while across Asia and Europe followed closely behind. America saw 28% of adults switch, while countries like Mexico, Argentina, and Brazil ranged between 21 and 23%. Joining us for more is Kirsten Lesage, who authored the study. Kirsten, thank you so much for coming on the show. First, what would you say is the key takeaway from this study?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, around the world, we see that a fifth or more adults have left their childhood religion, and most of the switching is actually from disaffiliation away from religion. So people who once identified with a religious group, but now identify as atheist, agnostic, or nothing in particular.
Well, you found that these two religions with the biggest losses were Buddhism and Christianity. Why those in particular? Are there trends associated with those faiths?
So we don't have any trends in this survey. This study really focused on the rates of religious switching, not why people are switching. Specifically, we asked respondents two questions. What is your current religion, if any? And thinking about when you were a child, and what religion were you raised in, if any? And from these two survey questions, we were able to calculate not only rates of religious switching, but also what share of respondents have entered or left a religious group. So it is true that Christianity and Buddhism are losing adherence, the most adherence due to this religious switching, but we're not able to speak to the why.
On the other side of this, which group, which religion did you see have the biggest increase?
Yeah, the group that had the largest net gains from religious switching is the religiously unaffiliated. So this includes anybody who identifies as agnostic, atheist, or nothing in particular. We sometimes call this group the religious nuns. That's spelled N-O-N-E-S. And for example, in Spain, the ratio of leaving to joining among the unaffiliated is 1 to 19.6. So this means that the unaffiliated have gained nearly 20 people for every one person that they have lost through religious switching in Spain. In the U.S., this ratio is 1 to 5.9. So that means that the unaffiliated have gained nearly 6 people for every person that they have lost through religious switching in the U.S.
Why was this a survey that you wanted to launch in particular? You study religion and religion trends over the last quarter century.
Yeah, I've been studying religion for a while. This study is part of a larger cross-national study that we do in 36 countries, where we're really interested in looking at global attitudes and trends around the world, including topics of religion. And so this was a chance for us to be able to explore in the 36 countries that we surveyed in, what share of people have left religion, joined different religions, and seen different rates of religious switching across these 36 countries that we surveyed in.
Well, it's certainly information and good food for thought. Thank you so much, Kirsten.
Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, today is certainly a day to be remembered. First, 5 years ago, in the midst of the COVID pandemic, the Holy Father delivered an extraordinary Urbi et Orbi blessing, the message he gave us that still resonates today. Plus, it was 9 years ago today that our foundress, friend, and spiritual mother was called to the Lord. Today, we speak with EWTN's chaplain about her life, legacy, and influence on the lives of so many Catholics. A controversial assisted dying bill in the United Kingdom might be delayed until 2029. The parliamentary proposal would unleash medically assisted suicide on England and Wales. The delays come amid fears about the ability to implement and monitor such a system. The Catholic Church strongly opposes assisted suicide. On March 11, 2020, the World Health Organization announced the COVID-19 pandemic. As the world shut down and fear took hold, Pope Francis stepped forward to deliver an extraordinary Urbi et Orbi blessing, offering hope in the middle of the storm. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Siedegren has more.
5 years ago today,
Pope Francis walked through a nearly deserted, rain-soaked St. Peter's Square to deliver an extraordinary Urbi et Orbi blessing. On March 27th, the Holy Father addressed the city of Rome and the world.
Thick darkness has gathered over our squares, our streets and our cities. It has taken over our lives, filling everything with a deafening silence and a distressing void. Like the disciples in the Gospel, we were caught off guard by an unexpected, turbulent storm.
With more than half of the world's population confined to their homes, the Holy Father prayed for an end to the pandemic, asking God for mercy, healing, and strength in the face of suffering and uncertainty. He encouraged all to turn to Christ and to embrace their faith over fear.
Signore, benedici il mondo.
Lord, may you bless the world. Give health to our bodies and comfort our hearts. You ask us not to be afraid, yet our faith is weak and we are fearful. But you, Lord, will not leave us at the mercy of the storm. Tell us again, do not be afraid.
Ripeti ancora, voi non avete paura.
This was a stark contrast to the usual grandeur of the Urbi et Orbi blessing. Urbi et Orbi, Latin for to the city and to the world, is the most solemn form of a papal address and apostolic blessing given by a pope and is reserved for the most solemn occasions. These include Christmas Day, Easter Sunday, and the proclamation of a newly elected pope concluding a conclave, during which thousands of faithful gather in the square to receive the special blessing.
May your hearts be filled with hope and joy, for the Savior has been born for us.
But instead of cheering crowds, Pope Francis was accompanied by the icon of Mary, Salus Populi Romani, and the miraculous crucifix from the church of San Marcello, which tradition holds saved Rome from the plague in 1522. And he reminded the world that, even in the darkest moments, God calls us to faith and trust in him.
Embracing the Lord in order to embrace hope, that is the strength of faith, which frees us from fear and gives us hope.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally tonight, a somber anniversary for the EWTN family. On this day, 9 years ago, Mother Angelica died. Mother Angelica passed on Easter Sunday from natural causes. She was born Rita Antoinette Rizzo in Canton, Ohio. Her full religious name was Maria Angelica of the Annunciation. Mother Angelica was just a shortened version. And she founded a new monastery in Alabama. And to help support their work in the early days, the sisters sold fishing lures and roasted peanuts. For more, we turn to Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, chaplain for the Eternal Word Television Network. Father Joseph, you joined EWTN as an engineer just 4 years after the network was launched. What was your first encounter with Mother Angelica like?
Well, it was brief, but Matt Scalisi, who hired me for engineering, I worked in engineering for 2 years, he said, Mother has a sense about these things. She thinks you're supposed to be here. You know, and I had volunteered to work for nothing, which is kind of funny because Mother said to Matt, Matt said that she found volunteers too unreliable, so she's going to pay you a salary.
Now, there are many priests and religious that attribute their vocation to an interaction with or listening to Mother. What inspired you to become the founding member of the men's community founded by Mother just a few years later, the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word?
Well, something had been stirring in me. I worked in the medical industry as an engineer for 5 years, came across EWTN, ended up working for Mother. And there was no men's community at the time. There were about 12 sisters and about 25 employees. And we're still using the garage studio. And one of my first jobs was to help wire the new studio for audio. But then in 1987, so I came January of 85, Mother announced she's beginning a men's community. And the Lord gave me a number of confirming signs that that's what he was calling me to do. And it's been quite an adventure, you know, these 40 years watching the network grow to reach the whole world now.
Well, it's been 9 years since Mother Angelica's death. What were those last moments like?
It was quiet, and yet the sisters and the friars were gathered around her bed. We, in fact, we prayed the Divine Office and the Divine Mercy Chaplet around her bed. We knew that probably it was going to be soon. And, you know, an interesting thing, Monse, is that Mother passed away on Easter Sunday during the great Jubilee Year of Mercy, the extraordinary Jubilee Year of Mercy that Pope Francis had proclaimed. And this year, her birthday is on April 20th, which is Easter Sunday, in the Jubilee Year of Hope. And so I sent an email to all the employees that this was Mother's message, mercy and hope, and this is what we are continuing to do. And I really believe the network is an instrument of God's mercy to the world at this time.
Absolutely. That's certainly something that Mother would want us to remember. And she does continue to speak to all of us through this legacy of EWTN. What enduring message would she want our audience to remember?
Well, she always signed, you know, when people asked for her autograph, she always wrote, "Jesus loved you, loves you, exclamation point, Mother Angelica." And I think, again, that we're all called to be saints, that it's possible for us to be saints. And she would challenge us. You know, one time we had visited with Sister Regina, who was the first Alabama vocation to join the monastery here. She had met Mother at 16 and joined at 18. And we saw her about a week before she died. And I said to Sister Regina, I said, "Sister Regina, what would you say to the friars? What's your message for the friars?" She said, "You can do better." And then she laughed and she said, "This is what Mother always told us. You can be better." In other words, Mother was calling us to be more. And that's what really the season of Lent is, isn't it?
Yes.
We can be better. And with God's grace, we will be converted more deeply and be more faithful to the Lord.
What a blessing. Well, Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, chaplain for EWTN, thank you so much.
Good to be with you.
Thank you for watching tonight. And remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.